WICN in Worcester, this is the Venture Forum, Tales of Entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts. I'm your host, Mark Reed Edwards, Executive Director of the Venture Forum. Now let's start today's tale. My guest on the Venture Forum this time might be a familiar voice here on these airways. David Ginsburg is General Manager of WICN. He's a Worcester native and returned to radio after an 11-year absence when he joined WICN in October of 2018. David has a background in both radio promotions and music programming, earned during a long tenure at 92.9 WBOS in Boston. He transitioned to social media marketing during a stint at a Boston area media agency before forming his own social media marketing consultancy, Rose Atwater Social. Now, as WICN General Manager, David continues to build on the rich legacy of the station, and with the renewed energy of the city of Worcester, something special is happening. So, in my effort to paint the full, rich picture of Worcester, I thought it would make sense to invite David to join me here. David, it is wonderful to have you on the Venture Forum.
Thank you, Mark. It is a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, this should be a fun discussion. I gave the audience a bit of a peek into your background, but can you share more in your career path that led to WICN?
Sure. I've had, like a lot of career paths, mine is much more of a zigzag pattern than it is a straight line. I grew up in a family wholesale business here in Worcester, and I was working on Water Street back before it was ever called the Canal District. It was a place you'd want to really hang out after dark. But I grew up in a family wholesale business, third generation, and after college, I worked there for several years and realized it just wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. So I got into radio. I had always loved radio as a kid, going on the road with my dad, my dad was a big radio buff, and listening to old radio shows. When I was a kid, I would listen to tapes of his old radio shows like Blondie and Dragnet, the Jack Benny Show, and I loved it as a storytelling medium, the theater of the mind. So in my late 20s, I got a job working at WBOS in Boston as the assistant promotion coordinator, which was essentially being a paid intern, and worked my way up the ladder. I was fortunate to have some amazing mentors that really helped me to figure out which way to go and how to make this all work. And when I left the station at the end of 2007, I'd risen from assistant promotion coordinator to becoming the program director. And then I consulted a bit in some other radio in the area. And at the same time, the social media thing was building. I had taken a job at a media agency to run experiential marketing for them. This was right as the economy was cratering in mid 2008. So experiential marketing was out the window, but social media marketing had become a big driver clients were asking about. So I helped to develop a white label offering for the agency with a partnership with a company in New York to offer this agency's clients social media services, got it up and running. And then the agency lost a big client and we got laid off. And the next day I got a phone call from somebody at the American Repertory Theater saying, we hired that agency to work with you. Can we still work with you? And I said, yes. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, for any entrepreneur, you know, sometimes you say yes and figure out how you're going to accomplish the task after. And what I learned fairly quickly was there's a lot of overlap between radio and social media marketing, and that, you know, in both endeavors, you're trying to build and engage and sustain an audience of people with a shared interest. You just do so through some different media. And I think the background in radio really helped me to accelerate my social media consulting business. And that was humming along. Things were going well. In summer of 2018, a mutual friend, Ty Irwin, who some of the listeners might recognize as a morning guy Ty from the old days of WFNX in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
So Ty and I have been friends for years. I met Ty when he was working at WROR when I was at BOS. They were down the hall from each other. Became friendly and stayed friendly over the years. Ty's a quite an interesting character and just a fountain of musical knowledge. So anyway, that summer, Ty reaches out to me and said, hey, ICN is looking for a part-time GM. Do you know anybody? And I said, me. I know me. So I ended up meeting with Amanda Carr, who was the executive director at the time, and I thought I was coming in for, you know, a half an hour conversation. Turned out we spoke for about 2.5 hours, and that led to an offer. I interviewed with the board of directors and the executive committee and was offered the job. And because of the for the listeners, nonprofit public radio is not the most lucrative endeavor in the world that you'll ever go into. So because of the salary, I worked out an arrangement where I was the GM and here physical 3 days a week. And then I still am able to maintain my other business. So I'm still able to do both. And I've slimmed my business side down a bit so that it's manageable, but I'm very fortunate to kind of still have that duopoly in my life. But being the GM has been a tremendous experience, and I'm grateful for it every day.
It's such a, you said some words there that made me think back to why I fell in love with radio, and I started my career in radio back, I don't even want to tell you how long ago. And that is the theater of the mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about some of the great things that have happened in radio, and a lot of it was in the 1930s and 40s with theater, with radio mysteries and things like that. And yep. That's still how I feel about radio, even when I'm listening to music or I'm, you know, listening to the news. It still transports me to somewhere else. And your mind kind of fills in those blanks.
For sure. And that's the beauty of it. You know, as a kid, you know, especially when I was young not only just the drama shows and the comedy programs, but even just listening to music and trying to envision what these people look like and how exciting it all must be. And then as I got older and started going to concerts, and then you hear a song on the radio and you think you have that memory back to when you saw the artist performing live, and it all kind of ties together. It's an incredible medium and remains so. And even in our advanced technological age, radio still is a central part of our media diet.
So I want to talk a little bit about Worcester, about this area and what makes it special for you. Mm-hmm. Do you have a story? Obviously, you had a family business on Water Street. What attracts you back to Worcester and keeps you grounded in Worcester?
Boy, it's a great question. You know, as a kid, I thought I'm going to grow up, I'll leave Worcester, I'll never look back, blah, blah, blah. And here I am as certainly not a kid anymore, mm-hmm. And living here in a fairly dramatically changed city from what it was like. And I think I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Worcester. I've always loved this city, even in its toughest moments. I always loved being here, living here. I think the quality of life here is very strong. And what excites me right now is that over the last decade, but really the last half decade, especially as it's accelerated, is the rejuvenation of the city of Worcester. And I know the pandemic has slowed that a bit, you know, for obvious reasons, but seeing the city evolving and becoming younger, hipper, more diverse for sure. It's always been a diverse city, but more sort of overtly diverse. And commensurate with that is the improved quality of life. You know, the revitalized downtown, the explosion in the restaurant scene, the local entrepreneurs that have been taking root here. You know, one of the challenges the city had for years was kids come here to go to college and they leave as soon as they graduate. And now they seem to be sticking around and building businesses. And then as a result of, you know, growing up and becoming adults, they get married, they start families, they settle down. And we've also seen a lot of influx of people moving here because they can no longer afford to live in Eastern Massachusetts. And they come here and realize you can get a lot of house for a lot less money, but also they settle in and realize the quality of life here is still very strong. And there's a lot to do from an arts and cultural standpoint, as well as in the business community. And I think that all lends itself to why the city is exciting and why I'm proud to be part of it and play a role here working in downtown Worcester, you know, as much as I do. I never thought I'd be working in downtown Worcester as a kid, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a great building you're in too.
It is, the Printers Building. So, and I got to give kudos to Davis Publications and the Wade family for the job they did in renovating this building over the last several years is remarkable. And the building is fabulous. It's beautiful from the inside and out. And it's a great community of entrepreneurs that are in the building. You know, there's a lot of startups here. There's some nonprofits. It's a great community to be a part of.
And you have Studio 50, which I hope at some point when we're doing the Venture Forum, we'll be able to actually record there and have a little audience when such things are feasible. Can you tell me a little bit about Studio 50?
I'd be happy to. And we'd love to have you record there, by the way. Studio 50 is a performance space and recording studio, a digital recording studio that we had built a number of years ago and renovated. So the room itself is acoustically designed. The sound is pristine in there. If you're recording a band, a solo singer, we record podcasts. We've been doing a lot of virtual events in there, which we'll talk more about in a few minutes since the pandemic started. But Studio 50 was our effort to create a professional digital recording studio with the best available equipment at an affordable rate so that we can have the local community come in and book sessions, whether it's a band recording, a solo singer that wants to lay down tracks for a demo. We've had some students who've recorded their demos here as musical prodigies that then they use that demo as their part of their college application. it's a phenomenal resource. And, you know, the virtual events that we've been doing in there when the pandemic hit, and suddenly, especially for nonprofits, one of the most crucial things that nonprofits do in the course of a year are their annual fundraiser events, and especially the larger fundraisers towards the end of the year. And suddenly that was impossible to do in person for obvious reasons. We made a quick pivot and were able to use the room to offer it as a host site for virtual events. And with our partnership with Media Boss out of Framingham, we can provide top flight video streaming, live video streaming, or record things that can be uploaded and shared later, whether you want to go to Facebook, YouTube, record something for your own website, whatever the case may be. We're able to make that look and sound first rate. And it's been a great addition to our business over the last 6 or 7 months.
So I think at its core, at least to me, WICN kind of binds the cultural life of Worcester together as a live radio station. And if you look at other radio stations, not to criticize them, but there's a lot of corporate sameness, and WICN is kind of unique. How do you define the mission of WICN in that perspective?
You know, the mission has for a long time has been to be the voice of arts and culture for Worcester and Central Massachusetts. And I think over the 50 plus years of the station's history, we've accomplished that by championing young artists, by giving exposure to bands and artists that may not receive so elsewhere. And fundamentally, the majority of our hosts are volunteers that do this because they love being on the radio and they love the music they're sharing with you. They're certainly not doing it for the money. And I think that's a big differentiator for a station like this. And is challenging as it can be to have mostly volunteers, staffing your radio station. It's also led to a very consistent output of product. We are live every day. And we, even in the midst of all this, are live with locally produced content 110 hours a week. When the pandemic hit, one of the more challenging moments, you know, it's the pandemic accelerated growth in a lot of ways for a lot of people, both from a technical standpoint and realizing that, you know, a lot of things can be done virtually when, you know, a year ago, not many people knew what a Zoom was. Mm-hmm. And as the general manager of a radio station, as a manager of people, you know, you're always learning and growing. And for me, that's certainly been the case. I'm a much better manager now than I was 2 years ago. And part of that was accelerated when the pandemic and the shutdowns hit. I had to make a decision because so many of our hosts or volunteer hosts are in high risk categories, whether due to age or illness or pre-existing condition or a combination of both. We had to limit who was coming in to just our few paid hosts and myself filling in and restructuring our lineup so that we could still be on the air 24 hours a day. We had some hosts that were able to record their shows at home and send them in so that they were recording the show in real time, sending the whole finished product in, and then we air it usually within a day or two so we could stay on the air. You know, it was critical to me that not only do we stay on the air and keep providing a service, but in the onslaught of news and information that was coming through in the spring, and a lot of contradictory news that was coming through, we didn't know, between the newness of the virus and some of the bad actors online and some political challenges. One of the things I set forth as a goal for that initial time period, and it's carried on, has been WISN should be a respite from the onslaught of news and info and all of the other sort of ongoing heartache that we were experiencing collectively. So we provide news and updates, you know, through with the NPR news that airs at the top of the hour. And we built a community resources portal on our website to provide accurate information, links to accurate information and resources. But otherwise, we wanted the station to be kind of a refuge for people that want to escape the constant barrage of news and information, the social media overload that we tend to experience. And that worked out well. And I'm very proud of how we were able to stay on the air through all of that. It was not easy.
Yeah, it's been a challenge of a year all around. And for a volunteer organization, you know, predominantly volunteer, that's last March must have been a kind of tough adjustment for you. But the sound of the station is great. And you know, I think the average listener probably wouldn't have noticed any hiccups.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. It's a kudos to the staff that stepped up and really, you know, between Michelle Wilson in the morning and Joe Cicero, who does middays, and Tyler Alderson, who does middays, shifting their schedules, their flexibility and willingness to do that was a huge help. I covered a lot of shows as well, which I enjoy doing too, but it's, you know, it adds another layer of work on top of things. But, you know, listen, I'm fortunate to be healthy and able to still do the work and keep us, you know, it's critical we stay in the air. And like everybody in business during that period early on, there's no blueprint to follow. There's no, you know, we know how to operate if there's a snowstorm and what the potential outcome of that could be. There's no blueprint for a global pandemic suddenly setting in that has an airborne virus that has the potential to be lethal. So you learn quickly how to prepare. We, in some cases, probably over-prepared in terms of sanitizing and getting supplies to keep us going. But I'd much rather be too prepared than be caught flat-footed and then have to scramble to try and make up.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody was kind of finding their way from large companies to small nonprofits.
Yeah. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, but our listeners are amazing. And, you know, as a nonprofit station that relies on listener support to operate financially, you know, we were really nervous coming into our March fund drive. Will people contribute given the economy suddenly cratering? And our listeners did. They've been an amazing resource. They've contributed. A lot of the credit for that goes to listeners, obviously, but as well as our team internally. You know, Melanie LaBeouf, our development director, who's the first development director we've ever had full time, and Emily Morrow in our promotions, or I'm sorry, our membership coordinator, both of them really stepped up as well to help amp up our ability to do more effective fund drives. I did a lot of work to restructure our fund drives and rewrote all the scripts, and we collectively changed our approach to make this more efficient for the host as well as for the audience. But the audience, I give our listeners so much credit for, and I'm so grateful to them for how they've supported us throughout the course of the year. We're still, you know, we're getting through, but it's not easy. And a lot, you know, we'll talk more about the business stuff in a minute, but it's because the listeners have been so supportive through the course of 2020 and into 2021 that we're here and able to do this. And I just, you know, to each of you that have made a donation or become a member, I can't thank you enough.
Yeah. So you just described something that is really an entrepreneurial experience, right? And I think at the heart of radio is kind of that ethic, that entrepreneurial ethic, the, you know, kind of turn on a dime kind of feel.
Yeah.
It is a scrappy business and it requires quick thinking and zigging while everyone else is zagging. What charges you up every day about radio and WICN?
It's a great question, Mark. A couple of things. One of them is just inherently to my personality that growing up, I never wanted to just be another guy in middle management at some nameless, faceless corporation that, you know, wearing khakis and a blue shirt to work every day. Yep. And I've managed to avoid that for the majority of my career, which I'm grateful for. And I think radio tends to attract people that don't fit a typical career path or typical office environment. So that part kind of gets me, just the fact that I feel like I'm doing something different gets me going every day. And then it's the challenge of it. You know, I really enjoy the people I work with. We've put together a very strong team. We've had some turnover here over the last couple of years, but we've got a really strong team in place that not only is everyone good at their jobs, but they're good to work with. And that's not, you know, for anyone listening that's been in business, you know, that's not always the case. But I get to work with a great group of people every day. We have a lot of fun doing this as hard as it can be. And as you know, long as the hours can get sometimes, it's still fun to come to work every day. And, you know, I take a lot of pride in the fact this is my hometown radio station. It's been successful for a long time. And my job is not to fix anything, but to grow upon the foundation that's been set and expand upon it and keep the station vital and evolving through the next phase of its life. And serving as the hub of arts and culture for the city of Worcester in central Massachusetts, and continuing just to day in and day out to help bring really good radio to the audience.
Awesome. Well, we're not done yet. We'll be right back. We're back with WICN General Manager David Ginsburg here on the Venture Forum. David, you've diversified the evening lineup with the addition of shows like the Venture Forum. Can you share the other shows that don't necessarily have a music focus?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So one of my goals when I first got to the station in looking at the kind of taking an agnostic picture or an agnostic look at the entire lineup and the station's flow was that we have these great talk shows on Sunday nights, but they're sort of siloed on Sunday nights and not getting as much listenership as we would like them to get. And some of that is just simply the function of the way people's weeks work. Sunday night tends to be the biggest night of TV, you know, each week. And it's where a lot of the prestige programs end up. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to give the talk shows more awareness and get more people tuning into them, because they vary from business focused shows like the Venture Forum and another show I co-host called Business Beat, and then community oriented programming, including the Public Eye that Alvona has been doing for a couple of decades here at WICN, a newer show called Public Hearing with Joshua Croak, who has really created a phenomenal show on Wednesday evenings. But my goal was, how do we add a more overtly NPR-ish feel to the station? And we had been running at 6 p.m. some syndicated jazz related shows. They were all very good, but it didn't feel quite as WICN as I was hoping to. So a few months ago, we made the decision to add our Sunday night talk shows and also air them at 6 p.m. on weeknights. So on Mondays is Business Beat that I co-host with Ian and Aaron from Media Boss. And then that is followed by Alvona's Public Eye, which is a local community affairs show. It's very, very good. Al's a great interviewer. Tuesdays is An Hour of Inquiry, which is Mark Lynch's interview show. Mark is a tremendous interviewer who speaks with a lot of artists and authors and educators. The show is fascinating every time you listen to it, no matter who the guest is. It's always a great conversation. Mark is an amazing host in that he's able to read in about a dozen books a week and absorb them all and be able to rapid fire questions at the guest. Yeah. Wednesdays is Joshua Croak's Public Hearing, which I urge everyone to check out. It's a fantastic program focusing on local issues here in Worcester. And Thursdays now is the Venture Forum, followed by another show that I'm co-hosting as I slowly take over every show on WICN. A new show called Culture Beat that we just launched. I co-host that with Nikki Erskine from the Worcester Cultural Coalition. Nikki's the marketing manager there. And the impetus for that show was, how can we provide more of a spotlight on the arts and culture in our community here in the region? We have a longstanding working partnership with the Worcester Cultural Coalition, which is an umbrella organization of about 80 nonprofit arts and culture organizations. And how can we give them a bit more of a spotlight and awareness, and especially during the pandemic time where so many nonprofits are struggling financially, to provide the audience with awareness of organizations they may not be familiar with in ways they can support them, whether it's by making a donation, buying tickets to a specific event, or even just sharing news and information about them on their own social media pages. So far the response has been very positive, and I like the way the station sounds, and it's a nice flow from the jazz program during the day into our specialty programming that airs weeknights from 7 to 10.
Yeah. So it kind of is a bit of a buffer between the jazz specialty stuff. And tell me about, the kind of music WICN plays during the day and then at night. For someone who's maybe tuning into the Venture Forum, like one of my relatives maybe, who hasn't listened to WICN, what could I expect if I woke up at 6:30 and turned the radio on? What can I expect throughout the day?
So you will hear jazz throughout the day, and jazz can be a very broad-based term, but coming back to something you mentioned a little while ago about commercial radio versus what we do in nonprofit public radio, our hosts choose all of the music that you hear on the radio every single day. There's no central playlist. There's no commands from on high saying you have to play this song, 14 times an hour. It's all self-chosen by the hosts themselves. A lot of them will create themed shows depending on someone's birthday or celebrating a songwriter or a specific anniversary. So in the morning with Michelle Wilson, you might hear more R&B leaning jazz than you might typically hear later in the day. Joe Cicero does on the Jazz Highway, plays a lot of new music as well as a lot of familiar music that more traditional jazz, if you're a fan of that. And then, from the blend is again a similar mix of old and new and a really wide range of jazz from big band to bebop to jazz interpretations of familiar pop songs. And then Standard Time is a very popular show in our afternoon. Standard Time is exactly what it sounds like. It's jazz standards, both vocal and instrumental. Everything from, Coltrane and Mingus into newer artists like Dave Stryker and everything in between. It's a really good mix. And, if you like jazz, and for anybody especially who hears jazz and thinks, ugh, that's, they think of Kenny G or something, it's not that. You will within 10 minutes hear something that you find your foot tapping to, and then you go, oh, I didn't realize that was jazz. I really like this.
Yeah. And one of my favorite things is getting in the car, turning on 90.5 and hearing a big band tune. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily listen to big band music regularly, but it brings me back to, you know, my dad used to play that, and it's just, it's such an incredible sound.
For sure. And we're one of like 15 stations left in the country that's primarily playing jazz. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the big band stuff. I happen to really like that as well. You know, when I was growing up, my dad was a big classical music buff, but he also loved opera and Broadway. So I grew up hearing a lot of big band stuff as a result of that. But just a few days ago, I was listening to Howard Kaplan do the Saturday Swing Session, which is all swing music. You realize that it's a very, you can draw a line from big band music straight into rock and roll. And it's a very short drive in that the syncopation and the rhythms and stuff and the playing itself, you know, I'm a rock and roll guy, but that stuff really gets my toes tapping. And it reminds me in a very kind of fun, warm way of the swing band renaissance in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah. And there isn't a rock drummer in the world who doesn't worship Gene Krupa. You know, one of the great drummers influenced so many rock and roll drummers.
Yeah, Gene Krupa and Ginger Baker, who, you know, people may recognize from Cream, but also was a badass jazz player. Who was one of the greatest drummers that ever lived.
Yeah, yeah. So one more question. There's a lot happening in your backyard. If you look out the back of that building, Polar Park is rising just across the street. Yeah. And that's kind of a hopeful sign. Even without the pandemic, it was a hopeful sign that, you know, they're building a ballpark there and we're going to have a AAA baseball team playing in Polar Park. And so as we come out of the pandemic with that kind of stuff happening, what are your hopes for Worcester and WICN?
I mean, I'm hoping for free tickets, but if you're listening, no, I'm hoping that it's going to continue to change people's pre-existing perceptions of Worcester that, you know, from years ago that may have not had the right connotation that we would want them to have. I think having a minor league, a AAA team, you know, affiliated with the Red Sox in a brand new park that also is part of a larger development in that area. There's so much to do in this section of the city now. The Canal District is filled with restaurants and the Worcester Public Market and the Crompton Collective, which is a phenomenal place to go shopping and poke around. And then further downtown, I mean, everything from Worcester Common is coming along nicely. The library is being redone and the facade looks great. There's tons of restaurants and shops along the way here. I think it's going to change people's perceptions of Worcester itself. And just for the people that live here or live within the area, it's another way to be able to take your family and have some wholesome entertainment at a pretty cost-efficient means. So I just think it adds to our overall quality of life to have them here and another way to enjoy the city.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Venture Forum, David. This was a great discussion.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm Mark Reed Edwards. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Venture Forum from WICN in Worcester. Learn more at theventureforum.org and join us next week as we share tales of entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts.